from KCRW and KCRW.com. I'm Evan Kleiman, and this is Good Food. Today on the show, discover the best wines you've never tasted. Myanmar is in the midst of a coming out party. Could that mean that more Burmese food is going to be on the menu? Jonathan Gold's here with a look at a very special food court, and you'll have an opportunity to win a trip to Fiji just a bit later on the show. But first, let's check in with Laura Avery, who's at the Santa Monica Farmers Market, with a look at what's fresh and in season this week.
This is Laura Avery with the Market Report. The weather has turned warm, and the first thing I like to think about when the weather gets warm is ice cream. And Shiho Yoshikawa is here at the market, as she is every week. She is the ice cream maker extraordinaire at Sweet Rose Creamery. And Shiho, you're here, and you make just unbelievable varieties of ice cream inspired by the farmer's market. Can you tell us some of your flavors and how you came to be such a fantastic ice cream maker?
Everything that I make is really inspired by farmers market, what I found every week. Right now, it's all about citrus, of course. I just got some fantastic perfect tangerine from Polito Farm. And I also have Oro Bronco, which I paired it with mint, and that's going to be made into sorbet. But the skin part of the Oro Bronco will be candied, and then it'll be mixed in with chocolate maybe next month. So I try to use, you know, all the fruits as a whole. It's kind of fun to do.
Oro Blanco is that wonderful sweet white grapefruit.
Yes.
Yes, with a very thick rind.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I love that rind part because it gives a little bit of bitterness. So when you candy them, it's like perfect sweetness and with a bitterness and like very flagrant skin. It's a beautiful thing.
And the flesh is so sweet. So when you're making the actual sorbet, are you using the juice or the pulp or both?
Both.
Do you use a conventional, like a juicer, like we would make at home?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And the skin does not go into the sorbet till the end?
No. And, you know, when you are doing Oro Bronco, especially, you don't want to have any pith either.
Which is what? The white stuff?
White stuff.
Mm-hmm.
White stuff will make it bitter, so you want to avoid that. But when you candy them, it's great.
And do your ice cream at Sweet Rose, is it custard? Does it have eggs in it? Do you have both? What kind of ice cream do you make?
Well, if I say ice cream, yes. It's a full-on custard. So it'll have milk, sugar, cream, yolks, mm-hmm. all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I do sorbet. I do dairy-free ice cream, which does not have any dairy. So I will use like soy milk, almond milk, rice milk. And sometimes I do frozen yogurt or sherbet. Sherbet has fruit juice and cream milk, no yolks. It depends on what I'm doing and, you know, I feel like it.
So the difference between sorbet and sherbet is sherbet has milk in it, but sorbet doesn't.
Yes, uh-huh. Exactly.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Shiho, for just being an ice cream goddess out here at the market and for supporting the farmers. It's so delicious. That was Shiho Yoshikawa, and she is the ice cream guru / goddess over at Sweet Rose Creamery at the Brentwood Country Mart. 18 flavors a day, fresh from the farmer's market. One of the flavors that Shiho didn't get to talk to us about was the kiwi that comes from fresh produce here at the farmer's market. JJ's Lone Daughter Ranch, Laura Ramirez is the farmer, brings kiwi, and she's one of the few that's still growing kiwi in California. So, Laura, you said Shiho made you some of her ice cream and brought it to you. Tell us how that was. And then she uses some of your other fruit as well, doesn't she?
Oh, yeah, she does. Boy, whatever she makes seems to be great. You know, but she does like the kiwi. The kiwi she loves because I have little small kiwi, and they make, she says they're very fragrant, and they taste so sweet and nice, and they're easy to peel. And the seeds aren't quite as hard as some of the seeds might be, so she says they're really perfumed and kind of florally tasting. So the other thing that she uses are my tangelos, and the tangelos are a combination between tangerine and a grapefruit, and they're really great right now. If you like a great combination between the acid and the sweet, they smell like they taste. They taste like a true tangerine.
And the way you tell a tangelo, it's got that bump on the top.
Well, not all of them have the bump on the top, but some of mine have the bump. What do they call them? The bells? Some people call them honey bells. But
Yeah,
so some of them do, some of them don't. I think over the years, the bell kind of goes away.
Okay, And the other thing about a Tangelo that I like is it's highly seasonal. So as a season, they just keep getting better and better, and they're so incredibly juicy.
Oh, so juicy. You have to watch yourself. You get spilled all over yourself. And you actually can't call them seedless, but a lot of these don't have but maybe one seed inside. Sometimes you don't even find any, but I can't really say they're seedless. And then they'll just get sweeter through the season. So this is actually my first week with them. So in another couple of weeks, they'll be sweeter and sweeter, and they'll just keep getting sweeter. But I kind of like the mix between the acid and the sweetness. So.
Right. And the Tangelo season is going to go until when?
It should be about 3 months, 3 months worth, at least until before, right before the end of the summer, I would say.
Good. All right. Good to see you. Thank you.
Good to see you, too.
That was Laura Ramirez. She's the farmer at JJ's Lone Daughter Ranch, and she grows kiwis, brings them in from Redlands, and now her Tangelos are also in season as well. For the Market Report, this is Laura Avery.
A recipe from Shiho Yoshikawa's on the Good Food blog. This week's episode of Good Food is shorter than usual. That's because it's our winter pledge drive, when we ask you, our listeners, to support the programming you love here on KCRW. Everything you hear on Good Food, the recipes, the stories, the restaurant suggestions, are all made possible by listener support. And this is my quick plea to ask you, the listener, to join KCRW today and listen as a member. It just takes a minute. Call 1-800-600-KCRW right now, or go to kcrw.com/join to make a donation today. Now, let's get back to the show. Last year, Myanmar, or Burma, had a coming-out party of sorts. Political prisoners were freed, and diplomatic relations with the United States were normalized. And, of course, leave it to the food-obsessed to turn political news into an eating adventure. Sang Yoon, chef and owner of Father's Office and Luxion here in L.A., has begun exploring Burmese food, something that most of us, myself included, know very little about. I asked him if there's any Burmese food in Los Angeles.
Not a whole lot. There's a small concentration of Burmese sort of, Burma town or whatever you want to call it, out by Whittier. And there's a Burmese food festival they have out there every year, which I've been to for the last few years out in a row now. But it doesn't seem like a really huge community. I mean, knowing what we know about that country, it's sort of like, next to North Korea. I mean, in terms of it's the way they, handle their people, and it's a very closed society. And tourism there, even like 10 years ago when I thought about going there, it was challenging. You had to get special visas, and they only let you see certain things, and parts of the country have been off limits. But it's nice to see now, sort of like what maybe Cambodia or Laos was like, 10 or 20 years ago.
What are some of the hallmarks of it? What would look familiar and what would look different to us?
Just from what I have eaten and have studied and read about and have cooked, it's like a lot of Southeast Asian cuisines. It's kind of a mishmash. It's sort of this natural fusion because of geography and because of the neighboring cultures. It's really part Indian. There's distinct Chinese influence, and there's even some Thai influence. But of course, it's always expressed when you throw all those things into a vat. And, when you mash it all up, what comes out is really, really interesting. In most of the dishes I see more the Indian influence. But as you get deeper into the cuisine, there's a dish, for instance, we serve at Luxion, which is the Chiang Mai noodles, which if you look back the history of that dish, that's sort of a Thai-influenced dish that kind of like wormed its way into Burma and then came back with more Burmese influence by the addition of using sort of more of an Indian curry flavor profile. So it's sort of like these countries are kind of giving each other their own cuisines and then, giving it back later on. And I hope it gets popular one day. I really do.
Well, it sounds like it would be completely delicious. I understand that you're making a salad with an unusual ingredient.
Yes, there's a salad that I've been chasing, literally chasing, to figure out how to make this salad for over 2 years. So I'm trying to make a salad. It takes 2 years to figure out how to make a salad. This is how horrible and beguiling it is. But it's really the dressing that was the problem. If anyone's ever been to a Burmese restaurant anywhere in the country or been to Burma, there's an ingredient called lapet tot, which is basically it's really a special occasion dish in Burma. And it's often eaten with cabbage and a lot of crunchy little bits, little fried maybe lentils or fried yellow peas, sunflower seeds, and this big pile of what I would describe as a rather unappetizing-looking shade of brown-green mush. Looks like old grass. It was stuck in your, like, in the teeth of your lawnmower. And but it has the most interesting flavor. And what they do with these tea leaves is they ferment them and then pickle them and then mash them all up with chilies, garlic, some lemon juice, and it turns into this most incredible paste, which the way I translate it is I turn mine into a salad dressing. But it has an incredibly addictive flavor. I mean, the only way to describe it is you get that tannic after flavor, sort of like after you have a sip of tea, it kind of leaves you with a little bit of dryness.
Astringency.
A tiny bit, yeah. Nothing crazy, but it just makes you want another bite. And when I first experienced it, I was completely taken by it and immediately tried to figure out how to make it. I've even tried, you know, fermenting my own. I dug a hole in the backyard. I did all the things that you know, one would do, you know, when you're trying to figure something like this out with little to no success, because really there's so little written about it, in English at least, that I could follow. So
it's actually tea leaves, the tea that we drink.
Mm-hmm. The actual leaves, which I understand are steeped and then, you know, drank as tea, but then saved for the purpose of, you know, they put it in a pile and they let it ferment, sort of like a tea compost in a way.
So it's like used tea leaves uh-huh. that are then repurposed.
Yes.
So where do you get this ingredient?
See, this is where it gets sketchy. Yeah.
You have to kill me if you tell me?
I might, yeah. And yeah, we can't really talk about that.
So is the product actually sort of exported in some, like, torturous, circuitous way?
Have you seen Traffic? They're brought over in teddy bears. I don't know, really. I don't, you know, maybe the less I know, the better.
Are you serving this now at Luxion?
We just started serving it a few months ago, and the response has been really, really positive. But like I said, this is, when I heard about Burma, or Myanmar opening up, I just said, you know what, this means I should go there, and I'm going to learn more about this dish and other dishes. It's exciting, I think, for curious culinarians and foodies to really discover something brand new. It so rarely happens.
That was Sang Yoon, chef and owner of Father's Office and Luxion. We've been talking about Burmese food. So once more, our wine guru, Stacy Hunt, who comes to us from Splash Productions and Duvan Wine and Spirits, has prepared a marvelous set of premiums for the drive. This time, Stacy, what is the theme?
The theme is the best wines you've never tasted.
How many bottles are in the package?
Three bottles in the package this time. This seems to be our most popular grouping. And the wines are quite unusual because they come from areas that may not be known for what these wines actually are. So chances are we've never tasted them.
Okay, so let's start right from the top. We're going to Piemonte, Italy.
This comes from northwestern Italy, Piemonte region. And this region is famous for the king and queen of wines throughout Italy, Barolo and Barbaresco. In this particular case, there is a very small area within this region that produces white wine. And the white wine that comes from there is uniquely structured because it has this kind of very interesting soil that produces this very, you know, muscular red wine. And now we've got a white wine that is a blend of Chardonnay, which is not a local grape, and Sauvignon Blanc, which is also not a local grape, and a very local grape made in very small amounts called Favorita.
Okay, and now I'm going to say the name of the wine. It's a 2010 Pico Macario Estrosa Bianco.
And Pico Macario makes the big red wines as well. But in this particular case, this is kind of an experimental vineyard that he began working with in his property. And he's made about three or four recent vintages of this. And the alcohol level is kind of interesting, too, because it's only 12%, which means you can really enjoy this wine with food.
Okay, so now from Italy, we're going to Douro, Portugal.
Yes. Most people are aware that Portugal is the home of that great fortified red wine called Port. And yet, no one has really paid much attention to the work being done in the last decade there with still non-fortified red table wine. And this particular wine is called Vale do Bonfim. It's made by a producer called Symington, and they have a lot of funding to be able to experiment. And their first forays out into the non-fortified dry red table wines were, I would say, less than interesting. They were kind of old technology and not very exciting. Well, as time's gone by and their winemakers have traveled the world, they've brought some of that back home to Portugal. So now we get a wine made from three of the local grapes in Portugal, the Tinta Barroca, the Touriga Nacional, which is kind of like their Cabernet, and also the Touriga Franca. And so this is it's a new world style wine, meaning fruit forward, but really coming from kind of old and ancient grapes, which have a very interesting rustic taste to them.
Now, this wine you've described as being gritty, gutsy, dense.
Yeah. I think these grapes from Portugal are gritty and gutsy. If you think about the most testosterone-fueled Cabernet, that's the Touriga Nacional.
Okay, so now we're going to go from Portugal to France.
There's a section of France, the Provence, southwestern, southern Rhone area, that's getting a whole lot of attention, more than just the Rhone area, but these sort of outlying areas that hadn't been paid much attention to because they had been in the business of producing a large quantity jug-type local wine. But now they're beginning to produce some very interesting wine. And this one is called Fontenelle Coteau de Miremont. It comes from an area that is adjacent to Provence, adjacent to the southwestern part of France. It's not one that's been known to be producing wine, very much wine, in terms of exported. You know, it's kind of a local wine. But now they have put together one for export. They've made about 5,000 cases of this wine, I think it is. And it's made from Syrah, which is local in that region, particularly in the Rhone area, and old Carignan. Carignan is an old grape from that region. And these are old vines. By old vines, I mean they are at least 35 years old. When the term old is attached to a vine, that's the ruling. Kind of like us. We're at least 35. But in any event, this is aged in some beautiful French oak barrels, and it ages for about 10 months. What comes out of this wine is not a Syrah that's, you know, big and powerful like from California or the Shiraz from Australia, but more something that is kind of warmer and welcoming. And I kind of think of it as a wine to drink when you're eating chocolate truffles or something that's kind of braised, you know, where it has sort of a sweetness to it.
Wow, this sounds like such a really interesting selection. Thank you so much, Stacy.
Thanks, Evan. My pleasure.
Stacy Hunt comes to us from Duvan Wine and Spirits and Splash Productions. A list of the bottles in her Best Wines You've Never Tasted package are on the Good Food blog. So have a look, take it as a premium, and join. Now it's that time when writer Jonathan Gold pays us a visit. He's the Pulitzer Prize-winning food writer for the LA Weekly, and he joins me here on Good Food every single week with a restaurant recommendation. Today, he's indulging us with not one but several restaurant suggestions all in one locale. We're headed to the Westfield Culver City Mall, or, depending on your age, what you might remember as the Fox Hills Mall.
It's a food court that, unlike our airport or unlike LA Live or unlike any number of complexes, you know, actually looks and feels like Los Angeles. If you're walking from one direction, there's a Burger King, your heart falls, then you turn the corner and right next to it is a stall from Kyochan, which as as the fried chicken place in Koreatown that people drive from huge distance to go to, wait for long lines to get a table. And the Kyochan of Koreatown cooks everything to order. So you sit at 45 minutes eating those turnip cubes and waiting for your chicken finally to appear.
And how is the chicken at Kyochan at the Westfield Culver City Mall?
It's much faster.
Is it as good?
It's not quite as good. I mean, I went 3 times, and one of them, the drumsticks were a little soggy. The wings tend to be perfect. But it has exactly the same flavor and the same sort of almost, sponge sugar, top of the creme brulee, crunch to the skin, and the spicing of garlic and soy is the same. And it's just being able to get a box of Kyochan wings instead of a Cinnabon is a really good thing.
Yeah, it's a really good thing. So what else sort of tickled your fancy there?
I would say the other e-ticket ride is the only branch outside the San Gabriel Valley of 101 Noodle Express, which is famous for its Shandong-style beef rolls, which are Chinese pancakes, golden and sizzly and crackly on the outside and chewy, that are wrapped around braised beef with scallions and cucumbers and smeared with this beautiful house-made bean sauce.
Wow.
It's too good to eat in a mall. Is it exactly the same as the one in Alhambra? Not quite. I mean, the pancake seems to be a little bit thinner, and it's probably being sizzled to order as opposed to tugged into existence, but it's still really good. They also have a noodle dish, super simple, super home style, of stretchy noodles with minced chicken and cucumber, and this condiment that they give you of it's a spicy pickled vegetables.
So there are the two e-ticket rides at the mall.
Then the rest of it is good enough ethnic food. The Mexican franchise you probably don't want to deal with. It's your standard Fresh Mex place. The burger place looks dull but it's halal meat, and it gets a Muslim clientele. And at first, you're looking and you're seeing, the women and the wearing the scarves, and you're wondering why are they all eating hamburgers. You realize it's because they're halal hamburgers.
That's pretty great.
It is. And there's a Vietnamese place called, I think, Viet Express, that sells very creditable banh mi and pho that is at least as good as you're going to get on, say, the west side of the 110. There's a Mongolian barbecue place with the unfortunate name Mongrill. Somebody should have said that one aloud a few times before they committed to having the sign made, which is set up in a slightly different way than I'd seen it before. It's sort of a Chipotle-style line that you go through and you pick your meats and you pick your vegetables and you pick your sauces, and they put in a bowl and then, on the grill. And it's a lot. It's very popular with little kids who love watching their food being, pushed around the giant grill with 4-foot chopsticks. It's like going to the car wash and seeing your car get sprayed with a carnauba wax.
Oh, I love that. Well, this sounds like a good time.
I like this mall, or at least I like that part of it. Next time I need, shoelaces.
Thank you so much, Jonathan.
Thank you.
I've been talking to Jonathan Gold of the LA Weekly about the food court at the Westfield Culver City Mall. Get the exact address and recommended dishes sent to your cell phone in a text message. All you have to do is text the words good food to the number 69866. So that's good food to the number 69866. You can see all of Jonathan's restaurant suggestions also on our Good Food Restaurant map, which is on the Good Food blog. Before I go, I just want to make one last plea for your support. This podcast is produced by a public radio station, so we rely on your donations to keep our programming on the air. Consider joining KCRW. You'll be supporting the great shows you love, like Good Food, and also our incredible music lineup. We can't do it without you. Join before February 3rd, and you'll even be entered to win a trip to Fiji. Call 1-800-600-KCRW or at your convenience, go to kcrw.com and click on Join. Good Food is produced by Jillian Ferguson. Laurel Garcia and Candace Moyer are our segment producers. The executive producer is Harriet Ells. Thanks so much to Ronnie Mickelson and to Gary Masiha. I'm Evan Kleiman, and I'll see you back here next week for another edition of Good Food. Please don't forget to become a member today. We really need and appreciate your support.